Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the death of the entry-level gaming PC and ask the question, what is the most underrated PC component? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain.
Hey, Dennis, you know, I'm sure not unlike all of us that do this sort of stuff as a hobby, people come up to me all the time for computer advice, particularly buying or building advice.
Okay.
So this week I had a coworker come up to me and he had a pretty simple request. He was looking for a laptop that would be good enough to do some occasional gaming. Now, you know, I'm not a huge laptop guy. So of course my first instinct was, well, you don't want a laptop. You want to go out and build a PC because that's what we always say, right?
Well, yeah, you get the faster processor, you get better storage, and you get a better video card.
And it's upgradable. You know, you don't have to throw it away in 3 years or 5 years or whatever its useful lifespan is, batteries or technology-wise, right?
Well, yeah.
So anyway, I had this buddy give me a budget, and I went out to proceed to see if I could build a decent gaming laptop. And I confess, I know the market's bad, Dennis, but I hadn't really looked at it since Christmas because I haven't needed to.
Well, and the market has gotten worse. What was it? Several months ago, we talked about, you know, building a budget computer.
Yeah.
Budget gaming computer. We were looking to build something to play Battlefield, I believe. And so we looked at the minimum system requirements and then started to put something together. And we came up with, three generation old computers, which met the minimum system requirements and were not terribly expensive.
Now, in our defense, though, I think we should point out that for years, a lot of years here at Hardware Asylum, we found that you could build an entry-level gaming PC and the magic number always seemed to be about $600. And in that particular episode, which we'll link to below, and it might be good to check out, especially if you're having this same discussion with yourself or your budget, that you could do it for about $800. That's, I think, where we ended up, roughly.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could build a generic computer for $600, a good one for $800, and probably the one that you're going to use on as a daily driver and last for a while would be around $1,200 to $1,400. Yeah.
So that's inflation in the computer world, sort of. I don't know.
A little bit.
Chip shortage also, a lot of factors. But anyway, let's not go back to that. But what I found most interesting was I couldn't build a good PC cheaper than I could buy one. And in fact, it was worse even than that. I couldn't buy a good gaming PC cheaper than I could buy a gaming laptop. I don't think I've ever had that experience in my entire life as a tech.
Well, where do you think the cost problem lies?
Video card, absolutely.
Speaking of video card, we had the NVIDIA RTX 3050 release a little bit before we recorded this podcast.
We did.
And supposedly the MSRP was supposed to be like $600 or something like that.
Something like that.
But I go
or
out.
Or less.
Or less. I go out to Newegg and look, and it turns out you can't get a 3050 for less than $850, which is, that seems like a lot.
And I'd challenge you to try to buy one at that price because it's not always there even. So rather than spend time out doing these raffles or Newegg shuffles or whatever to try to get a card, I started looking at the alternatives. And that's when I stumbled across a pretty nice gaming laptop for the money.
Okay, do tell.
And it shocked me a little bit. Now, Dennis is going to put this link down in the notes here. And the price, of course, may change.
Yeah, but because it was on sale.
Yeah, but I found an MSI laptop for my coworker for $850 now on sale at the time this was recorded. MSRP, about $1,100.
Okay. And
so I'm going to run the specs by you because this is kind of interesting given that we just said a 3060 could be $1,000. And I just told you this machine is $849 because it comes with an RTX 3060. Now, I can't tell you what version it is, probably the entry level, but it is an MSI laptop. Mm-hmm. Comes with a 15.6 144Hz screen, which is nice. Not my favorite, but I'm about size because I'm a big gamer. Give me the widescreen. So
well, with a laptop, you don't want to have a huge screen anyway because laptops are designed to be portable.
And that's heat too, right?
And it is. Heat and power.
So of course, we got the 3060 that we just talked about. It's got a 10th generation Core i5.
Yeah, which is Comet Lake.
Yeah, so it's not the latest processor, but good enough. It's a Windows 10 machine, of course, with 8 gigs of RAM on board and an SSD drive, not a big one, a 512. So a lot of compromises were made in other places probably to get to this price.
And 8 gigabytes of DDR4 memory. But collectively, though, this is a very solid computer.
Fantastic. And it certainly hits the mark of I can play games and I'm portable and I'm a laptop. And I don't know what else people look for in a entry-level gaming laptop. Yep. It'll run Battlefield.
When we're looking at laptops, the one thing you have to consider is that we do have the mobile edition of certain items. So we do have the mobile edition of the 10th generation Core i5. That usually just reduces the amount of cores so that battery life can be extended.
Well, and to be clear, like we said, the 3060 is kind of where we start bringing people in if you want a gaming video card that can actually game. And that's because it's roughly the equivalent of the previous generation's 2070, which is what a lot of us are still running, myself included, a 2070 Super.
So when we pulled this one up, I went out and looked for the gaming laptop that I would suggest because I'm not necessarily cost bound.
Sure.
But I also look for a computer that's going to be around that $1,400 mark because that's where I see kind of a sweet spot of what you get and how long you can use it for.
So at $1,400, you ought to be able to, you know, at least get a, you know, 3070 Ti, right?
Well, I would hope.
Okay.
But basically, it's another MSI laptop, 15.6 inch screen, 1080p panel. This comes with the 11th generation Core i7, so it's a Rocket Lake. And okay. The i7 gives you higher clock speed and more processor cache. It's generally a faster processor, but in terms of cores, it's usually around the same to keep within the same power number.
Yeah, that's nice.
Comes with a 1 terabyte SSD.
It's about double.
And an RTX 3060.
Woohoo, and double the RAM at 16, so some bump ups.
Some pump ups, and from that, that's an extra $400 over the base price of the previous laptop that we just talked about.
Well, and I'd argue that except for the processor, which of course you're stuck with most of the time when you buy a laptop, that you could make that other machine into this machine probably for less than $400, but I don't know that you want to if you can bump up to that i7. But I challenge you, Dennis, what would a gaming PC in that same budget get us if we actually bought a real PC from a boutique builder?
Well, let's go out to CyberPower PC.
Okay.
That's one of the few boutique builders that we have reviewed on hardwareasylum.com, and I trust to build a good, solid gaming machine.
Absolutely. Great builders, great machines, and they don't tend to compromise on their parts, which is kind of rare from boutique builders.
So if we go out here, basically we're going to do a search. We don't care about the processor. All we care about is the graphics card, which we have an RTX 3060, and we need to have 16 gigabytes of memory.
That gives us an apples to apples if we can get the right processor.
If we search by the lowest to the highest in terms of price, we get a Windows 11 home machine using a Core i5 11th generation. It's a 11600KF, so it's overclockable. Mm-hmm. RTX 3060, which is what we talked about, 16 gigabytes of ADATA memory, and a 1 terabyte Western Digital SSD.
But we're paying...
We're paying $1,629.
Ouch. Now keep in mind that this, at least for CyberPower PC, is the lowest level RTX card that you can get. So that really is where they start their builds, $1,629. And that, I think, is even a sale price because it seems like everybody's on sale right now.
Yeah, it's normally $2,000.
Brutal.
So it's all about the video card, it seems.
Well, Dennis, I know the video card shortage and the chip shortage have both affected even consoles, and that's showing up in the PlayStation 5 market and the Xbox to some extent also. Mm-hmm. But if we are driving people away from entry-level PCs because they just can't afford them, particularly because they can't afford video cards,
yep,
then we must be driving them to consoles, right?
Well, you would think. Although we discussed how when you buy into a console, you buy into the ecosystem. So you have to get your console and your console games. You buy a game on that console and then you can't port it anywhere else. Sure. You got controllers, you got VR headsets.
Well, and that doesn't even take into account now that it's very difficult to buy physical media, so you don't actually own that game.
Although on the PlayStation, can't you buy a device for like the PS4 and then use it on the PS5?
Some, okay. But you can also buy a PlayStation that doesn't have a physical drive.
Ooh, yeah. So then you're downloading stuff off the internet the entire time.
And I think that's a completely different story. But what I think is important is there's this whole perception that console gaming is cheaper or console gaming is for kiddies because, you know, everybody buys a gaming PC if you're a serious gamer.
Well, yeah, you got to have your Nintendo 64, right?
Something like that. But we just looked at the prices. If you can find a PlayStation 5, it might be $799. And Xbox Series X, which is the latest Xbox, is, you know, $580 plus.
Or $35 a month.
Yeah. And that doesn't count that you're going to need two or four controllers and, you know, all the different peripherals plus your $60, $70, $80 games, right?
Well, and if we talk about the target audience, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking high school, college kids. How are they going to play their console?
Oh, yeah. You're going to need TV and maybe TV. You want a stereo. So I think that the perception that that's a cheaper ecosystem is kind of no longer true as the consoles have gotten pricier. Mm-hmm. So if we aren't driving folks to PlayStation 5s or Xboxes because they can't get them or they're almost as expensive as an entry-level gaming PC,
yeah.
then where is this next generation of gamers going to come from?
Well, can't you play Fortnite on your phone?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that is true. The yeah. rise of mobile gaming, right?
Yeah. So we have, you know, well, I got a gaming platform in my pocket right now, the Samsung S10, because it has to go with the S10 truck, which I will link down in the show notes.
Oh, I totally see the parallel. How did I miss that?
It's the inception of the phone and the truck together.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of truth to that. Electronic Arts just put out their earnings statement. And of course, I'm interested because I'm tracking what's going on with the Battlefield series. Or and not. They made it very clear that what's driving their business, well, it's not Fortnite, it's Anthem, believe it or not. But that, again, we digress a little bit.
Well, Anthem is into the esports thing. So mm-hmm. yes, that is going to be a huge driver.
So, you know, and of course, they've got all the sports titles that renew every year. But the biggest earning gains for them were on the mobile platform. And they've been buying, like everybody else, mobile gaming platforms and mobile gaming publishers to try to strengthen their market share.
Well, yeah, you get microtransactions on mobile. Well, you got to program your credit card in there just to use the thing, right? So you get your extra lives in Candy Crush. All you have to do is click a button or watch an ad, right? That's how they make their money.
Woohoo, yeah. And, you know, kids these days, everybody has a phone. I mean, it's just now you see kids as young as 8, 9, 10 with a phone. So well, make a good point.
Well, and we also have a new device that was just released, 3 weeks ago as we recorded this podcast, which was the Steam Deck, which is, what is that? It's like the fourth edition of Steam trying to come out with a console.
Yeah, but people seem to like this one. I'm not actually sure that you can get one, though, or if they've even shipped.
But it's basically an AMD-based mobile gaming platform. It's kind of like the NVIDIA Shield or what is it, the Razer machine?
Yeah, I think Razer has one too, the mobile gaming platforms. Now, Steam has been trying to get these things off the market for a while. So, yeah, you may be right that this is the fourth generation. Mm-hmm. I still have yet to use one, but they get better every generation. Yeah.
But if you have Steam on your PC, you can stream anywhere you want. It's coming back again to where if you have a gaming PC, you have a lot more options to allow you to do things.
Well, much as we sound sort of like hypocrites when we talk about Steam right after we bang the PlayStation for not doing physical media.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of interesting how that world has transitioned over the years. But the reality is they're smart. They're banking that they can stream the cloud media. NVIDIA's tried to do this in the past. You know, I think everybody's kind of got this idea that we're all going to go, you know, like Microsoft, right, to a rental model. EA's got their monthly, PlayStation's got their monthly, right, where you don't really own your catalog anymore.
So I'm going to come back, and I think I know what the answer is to this, but how would somebody get into entry-level gaming? If you can't buy an entry-level video card, you can buy PCs all over. What is it? You can buy one off a Craigslist that doesn't have a video card because
yeah.
somebody wanted one and the only way to get them is from like CyberPower PC or whatever, or from yeah. Walmart. And
it's a weird world we live in.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I think the answer is kind of interesting and maybe not a big surprise. It takes us back to the early days when PCs were crazy expensive back at the get-go, right?
Oh, yeah. Ironically enough, I found an old ad, and I'm going to digress a little bit. I found an old ad for a 386 40 megahertz in a catalog. Guess how much it was?
I'm scared. Like $5,000?
$9,000.
Oh, wow.
It had a 40 megabyte hard drive and, what was it, 2 megs of RAM or 4 megs of RAM, something like that. Not a lot. Not anywhere close to what we have nowadays.
Oh, wow.
And people are balking at video cards costing $3,800.
gloss aside that a little bit, because I think if we've learned nothing from the inflated price of the 3050s and the fact that we can't get them, it's that realistically we've proven that the market can buy these cards and that NVIDIA can't keep up. So there's no reason for them to drop the price.
Exactly.
No reason. Mm-hmm. So let me come back to your other question. How do you get into gaming these days? And I think we kind of danced around it a little bit, but to me, the answer is so obvious. Like in the old days when, wow, 386s cost $9,000, right?
Yeah.
The only way the average Joe could get a PC was the domino effect, right? The hand-me-down. So I think what we're going to see is a new generation of gamers, the children, the little brothers, whatever, that are getting these, what we would normally call old gaming PCs, because they're a couple generations old.
Well, they're a couple generations old, but they're just old by the person that built it or bought it to begin with.
Right.
There's still nothing wrong with it in terms of being able to play games. You can play the latest games on a 4-generation old Intel processor, as long as you have a relatively good graphics card. And if not, you just dial down the settings, play just fine.
And that's an interesting side effect of all these shortages too. When the manufacturers of the software are making these games, they have to make those games compatible with a wider range of video cards and processors and the like than they've ever had to before, mm-hmm. because people have a wider range of PCs. So you really can pretty safely buy or borrow or inherit a 2, 3, 4 generation PC. And that's how a lot of these folks are going to get into PC gaming.
Last segment, we talked about the death of the entry-level gaming PC, in some ways the mid-level gaming PC, and how things have just gotten cascadingly wrong in terms of building a gaming PC. Which reminded me of something that Darren sent me over Messenger the other day.
Oh.
Which was from iBuyPower, and really it's more of one of those social media clickbait things. Hey, come in and comment and let us know what you think. But it's an interesting question. And it is, what is the most underrated computer component?
Oh, yeah. Now, I thought this was a great question to ask. Because I think we all know right now that everybody's all about video cards, like we just talked about.
Which are really overrated at this point.
Super overrated. And to some extent, processors. Because mm-hmm. we all want the fastest processor. And there's a little bit of an Intel versus AMD thing starting to happen again.
Yeah. Hey, well, buy cheap. Buy AMD.
And
buy
if you're good. An enthusiast, I think maybe RAM. A little overrated. We talked about this a little bit. Yeah, you can get RAM up to what? Now they'll clock to like 6K, but what's good enough, right?
Yeah. Do you need 6K? No. Do you need 5K? No. Do you need 4K? Maybe.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. So I think we all know what the rock stars right now are of the custom PC world, right? That's really it. Mm-hmm. So now what is the most underrated part of your PC? Now, I think I know what your answer is going to be.
Cooler.
No. Ah, I'd have definitely said
power supply.
Power supply, right? Well, because we always talk about the power supply, the foundation of your modern build and how it's so often overlooked until, you know, something goes wrong.
Well, yeah, you can put together a $3,000 gaming PC without the video card. And if you don't include the power supply, it won't work.
Yeah, or worse, you buy a 600 watt and then you
put in a 3090 and then it won't start.
So, but I think that's the obvious choice. So now I'm a little intrigued because you said CPU cooler.
I did say CPU cooler. And it's because most people that build a computer or spec a computer, because sometimes they don't build them, they just spec them out. They go with, you know, a top-end motherboard, a good processor to go with it, an excellent video card because you got to have the graphics. And then they might put in an 850-watt power supply because they're smart. But then they've run out of money right. And then find the cheapest, jankiest CPU cooler that is a name brand, like the Hyper 212.
Hey, Hyper 212. Everybody has a 212.
Everybody does. And it's not a bad cooler.
It
works really well. It has two fans. But unless you spend the extra couple of bucks, you don't get RGB. You got to have RGB in your system, right?
Well, yeah. And not just any RGB. You got to have addressable RGB because, you know, reasons.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you buy that case with the glass side panel. You need to have something that looks good in your case. And the Hyper 212 is, it looks cheap because it is cheap.
All right. Well, maybe we need to add the case is kind of like the fourth overrated because I feel like these days everybody's getting these fancy cases that are super overkill for what they're building. But at least they're not expensive.
So what about storage? Is there any storage that's overrated? The fact that it is storage, or?
I don't know about storage, because I think these days, if you buy a storage device, you're kind of aware that you need to at least get an SSD. And I think people are becoming more aware that even an entry-level M.2 will outperform even that.
Exactly. Storage, no compromise.
So I know you said CPU cooler, and I can maybe come on board with storage, but I'm going to counter with, I think the most underrated part of your PC build is the sound card, or maybe the lack of a sound card in a modern build.
Yes. I am reminded of an Aris motherboard that I just recently reviewed. I can link it down in the show notes below. It has onboard sound, but it only has digital connections.
Interesting.
So it doesn't have any of the standard analog connections, like, you know, the four banana plugs.
Okay.
Which is what you would normally plug into your desktop speakers. Instead, all we have is a Toslink optical connection. We have a line in and a line out, which, you know, those are digital, but we don't have digital desktop speakers. So it would seem that this motherboard was designed with the idea that you're going to be plugging in your USB headset or your USB sound card, and that's how you're going to get audio through this thing.
So in a sense, they're planning on that you don't need it.
Exactly.
Or if you do, you're feeding it out into some external DAC amp combination or right, something like that.
But they felt bad enough that they needed to include some sort of sound card, otherwise the product wouldn't sell or something like that. That's kind of what I put into the review. But I am of the opinion that you need to have a quality sound card. And the fact that you don't is the underrated part.
Well, no, that's an interesting point, because we have talked about on the higher end motherboards over the last couple of years how much better the onboard components are, which includes the onboard sound. But I've noticed a trend away from name brand sound again on some of these higher end motherboards. I don't know if it's a cost savings, but I'm comforted by the fact that companies like Creative Labs, or Creative as they like to be called these days, are still out there making some quality products, but I just don't see them in builds.
They don't, because it's an extra $300 to $400 that you have to spend. And if you're already putting a Hyper 212 into your build because you've run out of right, money, then obviously sound is not a high priority to people, and it really should be. And the reason being is that discrete audio can be a lot cleaner than onboard audio.
Well, and you nailed it, because what are people buying? They're buying these gaming headphones, right? Mm-hmm. With the built-in USB processing for simulated 7.1.
Or Super X-Fi.
Well, and you know, Super X-Fi at least has a market because it's trying to do something unique. I'll defend that all day, but it does kind of support your, it doesn't support the argument, because it really is the same thing. We're taking it out of a discrete solution. Mm-hmm. And Creative is a great example, because they make terrific internal and external solutions, both of which we use in our primary builds.
I think we both have the AE5 in our primary builds, and I have an AE9 on the shelf that's going to go into my new system. And these are basically DACs that feed off of the PCI Express bus.
Yeah, and that's not enough even. I frequently use my X7, which is maybe getting a little long in the tooth, but as an external amp DAC solution, it is unparalleled, I think, out there.
Do you have that hooked up via the Toslink or the USB?
Oh, I have it through the USB, fully digital.
Ah, see? Kind of supporting what Aris has been doing with their motherboards.
Oh, no, I'm that guy. I've made it possible. Who knew?
But that is also an external sound solution. It doesn't have to be on board anymore. It just has to be connected to your PC in some way.
But going back to the whole underrated aspect of it, I don't know very many people that are going to buy an external amp DAC solution like the X7 for, you know, $300 plus.
No, that's kind of expensive. And it's really audiophile grade, because the idea is that you can change the op amps in the X7, for instance. You can change the op amps in the AE9. And it allows you to tune the sound the way that you want it to be. With the AE5, you just get fancy lights and that DAC option, and also integration with other Sound Blaster components. And once you have that ecosystem, they all work together because they know what they have and what they can produce.
It may be underrated, but I think it's criminally underrated, especially the AE5s and the 9s, because this is something that you can take with you to every new build. It's not getting out of date very quickly. Even a generation old discrete sound processor is going to be way better than onboard sound and all but maybe the most expensive motherboards. And even I think that's arguable.
That reminds me of this vicious cycle in computer hardware. So if we think back maybe 15 years, not even very long at all.
Right.
The onboard sound options on motherboards were terrible. And this prompted consumers to buy a discrete sound card. It gave them a lot more options. You could do more with a discrete card. It had positional audio. It had extra processors on board. It really depended on how much money you want to install on your machine. And a lot of times it increased performance because it could offload a lot of the sound processing to an external device instead of having it cycle around on the motherboard itself. A few years later, motherboard manufacturers caught on to this and started putting better sound cards on their motherboards, even claiming that they were supplied by Creative Labs. They would have the same software and a lot of the same capacity with the idea that now it's an upsell device on this motherboard. So we're going to buy this board that has a really good sound option. And we kind of gotten back to the point where now sound is really just kind of a necessary evil, but people are doing external solutions, so we don't need to spend a lot of extra money on this onboard sound option. But we have other manufacturers that still buy into it. So we have ASUS, for instance. They have an excellent onboard sound option. In some cases, because it's onboard with the motherboard, it is still limited in what it can do and how much noise it can filter out of the board itself. So you need to have that discrete sound option to get the best performance and the best audio quality.
And I don't think you need to be an audiophile to appreciate good sound, or a programmer to appreciate positional sound. But I do think that it's criminally underrated because people, when they're building their PCs, I still think the last thing that people think of is, oh, I need to buy a sound card. Because you know you've got that onboard sound. Mm-hmm. It's probably good enough. If it's not, you'll maybe fix it later. Or it maybe doesn't matter because you'll just buy USB headphones and they got their own processor.
But what about the other half of that, like speakers? If you do have a good set of USB headphones, you want to make sure that they have good drivers in them, that they fit over your ears properly, and that they will give you that positional audio the way that you're expecting it.
And this is the big yin-yang in the market right now, because we're finally seeing quality gaming headphones and gaming speakers and gaming sound cards and gaming sound bars, we know from our review this week. We'll link to that down below also. But at the same time, the onboard sound is in decline or stagnant. So I think we're going to see the market turn back to where folks that care are going to have to start to buy discrete sound cards again, or at least admit that they're not getting a good enough sound from their onboard solution.
Well, if you can't tell by how we wrapped up this segment, audio is the most underrated component in any PC build. Even in a console, home theater, anywhere, you gotta have good audio.
I totally agree. And it's one of those things where if you haven't experienced good quality audio, either positional sound in a game or full-bodied sound from your favorite music, you just don't know what you're missing.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareofsound.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware of Sound by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2022. Thanks for listening. So I posted a picture of my dot matrix printer on social media a couple weeks ago. And the first response I got was, I can hear this picture.
Nice. That must be somebody old school, because I would expect the younger generation to go, you know, what is that? Sort of like when you show them those old rotary telephones, right?
Pretty much.